Tennis fans can't even escape the grim news with their sport this week. Over the weekend, Roger Federer announced he's pulled out of the U.S. Open for a fourth knee surgery. He posted about it on Instagram.
I'll be on crutches for many weeks and then also out of the game for many months. So it's going to be difficult, of course, in some ways. But at the same time, I know it's the right thing to do because I want to be healthy. I want to be running around later as well again. And I want to give myself a glimmer of hope also to return to the tour in some shape or form.
Federer is 40. He has 20 Grand Slam titles, tied with Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. He'd been hoping to make history at the Open. Well, New York Times sports writer Christopher Clary has written a biography of Federer that's hitting the shelves next week. Pity the shelves. It's huge. It's titled The Master, The Long Run and Beautiful Game of Roger Federer. Chris, first, congrats.
Thanks, Robin. No, it's been quite a work in progress, kind of 20-plus years in the making, and it's definitely poignant to see the situation he's in now,
yes.
But he's accomplished so much.
Yep, you followed him across six continents. You've done 20 long interviews meeting with him in cars, at airports, as you're surrounded by fans. Let's talk about this headline. The knee makes its appearance on page 317. The year is 2016. Federer, one of the great players of all time, is drawing a bath for his twin daughters. He also has twin sons. He hears a click in his left knee as he twists. It's a torn meniscus. Now we have a new surgery. What do you make of this news?
So he was really kind of blessed for a long time in terms of his physical health and being able to play deep into his 30s. So the moment you describe in Melbourne, Australia, when he was running the bath for his kids, that was sort of when things began to change. But then he came back so strong after that. It took 6 months off at the end of 2016 and came back and had some of his best results ever in 2017 and 2018. Went back to number one at age 36 and was just kind of a fairy tale run for him there. But inevitably, the game is very grueling. Your body's going to break down at some point, and his knees have really betrayed him in the last couple of years. This will be his fourth knee operation he's going to do. And this one could be a bit more complicated from what I'm hearing. We haven't heard details yet, but this could be a really tough one to come back from.
Well, that, what you just said, is shattering to tennis fans. But to those, mildly interested, they may know him from Rolex ads. He's the beautiful guy. Isn't he French or something? He's not. He's Swiss-born. But why should they care about Roger Federer? Who is he?
Roger is a naturally gifted player, one of the most naturally gifted ever. But he's also a self-made man. I've covered him since he was in his teens and have seen his evolution, but I don't think I really grasped how challenging it was and what an accomplishment it was on so many levels. And he's somebody who started with a bad temper. He learned to manage his temper and his expectations and really became a Zen master on the court, working with psychologists and on himself and his coaches. He managed to really channel all that nervous energy and frustration into a very, very composed tennis player in style.
Well, as you say this, it strikes me as I read your book, tennis stars get cast in roles. Nadal is the pugilist and Djokovic is the joker. And Federer is now the smooth kind of Fred Astaire of tennis and Rolex ads. But as you write, one commentator called him a mini McEnroe when he was a kid. He would throw his racket. He would scream. There was that one story about his father throwing him some money and saying, get yourself a ride home when he was a kid. His parents didn't even like it. He was not fun.
No, he was tortured. He had a very difficult time losing. He was quite young at the time, but there are stories from his Swiss coaches when he was young about him sitting under the chair umpire's chair after a junior match where he lost and crying. Yeah. Everybody else went to have lunch and their picnic, and Roger stayed there on the court in tears, basically unable to control his disappointment. So I think we have to really recognize the achievement there in terms of being able to master that. He's been able to master himself as well as the game. And it also applies to his off-court things, Robin, his business career as well. He started from a very low point, unpromising point as a Swiss player from a small country, even though it's a wealthy country. And he built himself into the most successful financially tennis player ever. He's earned over $1 billion on court and off during his career.
Well, we'll talk about the game itself. There's a scene in the book where the great Andre Agassi, who's much older than Federer, plays him at the end of his career. Agassi's in the locker room. He's got his head in his hands, not because he lost, but because he says Federer is taking the game to a different level. It's just like, I can't go there. What level is that? Talk about his game.
Well, first of all, that from Andre, that story comes from Darren Cahill, who was Andre's coach for a long time. And you know, Darren was blown away by that moment just because he'd never seen Andre, a great, you know, long-lasting champion, have that kind of reaction to a match. And I think it's basically like realizing that the technology has moved beyond you, or the world that you're living in, suddenly you no longer fit entirely. That was Andre's epiphany that day, I think. And I think the problem with Roger is that when Andre played other players in the past, be it Pete Sampras or Boris Becker, Stefan Edberg, previous great players, he always felt there was a safe place to go. But against Roger, because of Roger's ability to take the ball early and create angles and power from anywhere on the court, there was really no safe haven anymore for Andre. Mm. And I think that's what he was feeling. And he also had a really, really hard time reading Roger's game. I think it's just that feeling of being rushed and confused. And during Roger's heyday, a lot of players felt that way.
Well, talk more about that. He has what the French call relâchement, you know, looseness and ease. He has a beautiful play. You talk about how he runs around to do a forehand rather than a backhand. I don't think he ever did a two-handed backhand. What is it about his play?
Yeah, I think that word relâchement, that French word, which is about relaxing and looseness, really does sum it up. But the question is why? And if you talk to people who were part of his career early on, now part of it is his childhood coach, Peter Carter, who was an Australian who sadly died in a car accident in 2002. But he basically built Roger's game. And one of the things he did was he sort of had him keep his eyes on the ball and the contact point quite a bit longer than the usual tennis player. Peter Carter did this himself. And it gives Roger this kind of polish on his shots. And it also gives the impression that he has a bit more time than everybody else. And he's also just a naturally beautiful mover with his legs and the way his footwork works around the court. But I think that extra bit of time that he seems to have is the key. What they call court vision in tennis, your ability to sort of see the whole canvas, if you will. Mm-hmm. And Marc Rosset, one of his childhood role models, Swiss player and Swiss Davis Cup captain, he feels Roger like Lionel Messi, the great soccer player, or Michael Jordan in basketball. They have this ability to process information just a little bit faster than other mortals, if you will.
Yeah, like everyone else is moving in slow motion in that moment. And talk about the other aspects of his life, that he works a room, that he's comfortable among people, and talking about his family and his wife, Mirka, a former player, very much involved in his career. He takes her and two sets of twins on the road, sometimes staying in the same, you know, suite, and other players are astonished by that. It also strikes me as we read this book, how much players, as I said, they're Shakespearean, they each are cast in their roles, it's hard to get out of those roles. They're yoked together for the times that they're at the same level and competing, most recently with Djokovic, which seems to be kind of an edgy kind of rivalry. The friendly rivalry seemed to be with Rafa Nadal. Here they are cracking each other up. They're making a promo for a 2010 charity match. Let's listen.
So, Rafa, do you know what you're going to give me for Christmas yet?
You know what? I'm going to come to Switzerland and play an exhibition match for your foundation.
So, Rafa, do you... He looks at me. Oh, God. Okay, here we go. So, Rafa... Okay. So, Rafa...
Christopher Clary, your book reminds us of the great rivalries, the great shots, the one he thought was the greatest, the tweener, hit the ball between his legs in the U.S. Open 2009 against Djokovic. But I just, you know, it's a tough question. There's a poignancy now. Do you think we're going to see Roger Federer out there again?
You know, the way we've known him as a real threat to win multiple tournaments in a year and really be a major challenger at the Grand Slam tournaments, sadly, I think not. This book, to be honest with you, I wrote it now partly because I felt like, you know, the main body of work for him was already finished. And I feel like the book has an elegiac tone to it in places and a valedictory tone to it as well in places. It's been a remarkable run. But there's no shame in that, and there is poignancy, but we've had a long time to appreciate him and his skills.
Well, and also some would say, maybe we don't count him out. New York Times sports writer Christopher Clary. Again, the book is The Master, The Long Run and Beautiful Game of Roger Federer, out next week. Chris, thanks so much.
Hey, it was a great pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.